the world is perhaps going a bit dark for the Great Barrier Reef in many respects. I mean, warmer waters are doing bleaching all over the place. But it's multifactorial, the problems with the Great Barrier Reef. And it's got a whole range of animal and human characters. And, of course, one of the animal cast is the Crown of Thorns starfish, which you've heard about, also called the sea star, although I don't think the coral polyps think it's much of a star. And that's Latin for Ancanthanstar plantae. I think I've got that right. And they're huge, nasty, big, stony-looking things, which, of course, prey and suck out the coral polyps. The name, the Crown of Thorns, comes from the way that it looks, because it's a bit like the Crown of Thorns that was put on Jesus Christ. Surprisingly, it's not native to Australia. It's from the Indo-Pacific region, and it's eating up our natural resource. So I've got Bec Roberts on the line from the University of Sunshine Coast. She's in her final year doing a PhD at the Gene Ecology Centre, and she's working on this spiny problem. Bec, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. And actually, I suppose you're picking up a lot of these little thorny things. Do you ever get spiked by them?
Yes, that does happen occasionally. Oof. If you're not careful.
Nasty.
I haven't had a really bad one yet, but if it was bad, you could spend several hours feeling quite sick and vomiting.
So really?
I've managed to avoid it so far.
Thank God. What piqued your interest about the Crown of Thorns? What are you doing studying them at the moment?
So my undergraduate degree was in environmental science, because I've always been really passionate about the environment and sustainability. So I heard a lot about it in my undergraduate degree. And then I moved on and worked on genetics for a year, doing my honours research on an endangered rainforest tree. After that, I really wanted to do molecular biology. And then this project came up, and I thought it was perfect because it involves doing molecular biology, but it has a really strong conservation focus, and I've always thought that it's a really important issue.
It is. I think the problem really is, it's not so much that the Crown of Thorns starfish exists, it gets into plague proportions, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly. So you're actually slightly wrong before. So they're actually native.
Oh, they are? Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that shocks a lot of people.
Oh, gee, look, I wasn't given very good research there, was I? Goodness. Sorry, go on.
So, they are actually native. They're not introduced.
Okay.
But that's a very common misconception, so a lot of people are shocked by that.
Yeah.
So the really interesting thing about it is that in small numbers, Crown of Thorns are actually really important on the reef. So they eat fast-growing, really common coral species, such as your staghorn and plate corals.
Right.
And that actually leaves room for slower growing rare corals to grow, such as your mushroom and brain corals and things like that.
So they sort of are part of the ecology.
Yeah, absolutely. So they actually increase biodiversity on the reef when they're in small numbers. But when an outbreak happens, their populations can be, you know, numbering in the millions. So that's why they're a problem.
Yeah. And what is there a particular set of circumstances which lead to these outbreaks? Have you found out anything why these are happening?
So my research doesn't actually focus on why the outbreaks happen, but there's a lot of hypotheses about that. None of them have actually been proven, and we'll probably never know for sure. But two of the main ones involve what's called the nutrient runoff hypothesis. So that's where up around Cairns, it's significant agricultural land. So every time there's significant rainfall and flooding events up around there, agricultural runoff that's full of fertilizer and nutrients ends up in the ocean, and that causes phytoplankton blooms.
Mm-hmm.
And the Crown of Thorns starfish larvae feed on phytoplankton. So that's one of the main hypotheses as to why the outbreaks happen. Another one is about the overfishing of their main predators. So there's the giant triton snail and the humphead Maori wrasse, which have been significantly overfished, which may contribute to the problem as well because they have no natural predator.
Yeah. And so what area of research have you gone into on these?
So my research is basically on chemosensation, so your sense of smell and taste. So we've collaborated with the University of Queensland, the Australian Institute of Marine Science, and the Okinawan Institute of Science and Technology, because they have Crown of Thorns in Japan as well.
Do they? And do they have significant reefs in Okinawa?
Yes, they do.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
So that's why we've collaborated with them. So that collaboration between all of our universities was to sequence the genome of the starfish. So we're looking at what genes they have and what they're used for. So my work focuses on their chemosensation and the chemoreceptors that they use to perceive their environment. So basically what I'm trying to do is to, instead of dealing with the outbreaks when they happen by, you know, manually killing the starfish, which is the best control method we have at the moment, it's about developing a biological control to stop the outbreaks before they actually happen in the first place. Mm. So if we can investigate how they sense their environment and how they reproduce, which is usually through pheromone cues, then we can possibly interfere with that process and stop them from reproducing or stop them from being able to detect their food source, which is the coral.
Oh,
so that's what my research is about.
Oh, well, sounds very interesting. What and where? How do they? Do they sort of have senses which are equivalent to smell? Do they?
Yes, basically. Oh. Yeah. So olfaction is your sense of smell, and in less developed species such as starfish, they basically rely on pheromone cues to mate to reproduce.
Uh-huh.
And the starfish is a broadcast spawning species, so they don't physically mate. They come together in big aggregations, big groups, and they release a pheromone cue, which tells all of the starfish in that group to release their gametes into the ocean.
Ah.
And so fertilization happens externally.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a pheromone cue or something similar that's making that happen, and that's what we're trying to figure out.
And if they're all coming together to mate, are they also getting the munchies as well? They get extra hungry?
Yeah. So they come together in these big groups for feeding and for spawning.
Right.
So, yeah, there's definitely some kind of chemical signal that they're releasing into the water and they're smelling with these olfactory receptors.
Wow. So it's kind of like a rave party for starfish.
Yeah, rave party for starfish.
They go a bit crazy. and you look at things like, you know, maybe the moon, the full moon affects it or things like that. Are there outside factors as well, do you think?
So that's an interesting one. We're not sure about that.
Could I join the group and we can investigate that?
there's some evidence to suggest that these kind of species are influenced by lunar cycles. But the starfish, generally speaking, spawns once per year.
Uh-huh.
So it's probably there's probably not much that we can do about the role of the moon in all of it.
No, there's probably not.
It's a possibility.
The moon always gets involved in some of these things, you know.
Yeah.
And of course it does. I mean, it is involved in the tides and so forth, so it has certain effects. But are you able to predict when an outbreak's likely to occur at the moment, or is it still pretty much a mystery?
I wouldn't say it's a mystery. So there's a lot of people from the Australian Institute of Marine Science that have been working on modelling these outbreaks. It's not my area of expertise, to be honest. But basically what happens is an outbreak will start around Cairns, and the outbreaks will spread north and south from Cairns over a period of about 7 years, and then eventually the population will decline, the reefs will slowly start to recover, and then an outbreak will happen again and it'll all start all over again. So.
All right. But you have a bit of information, and once you see something starting, all scientists and researchers like yourself think, aha, now it's happening, we're going to zip over to that area and test and measure and gather information.
I've been out on the boats where they employ the divers to kill the starfish. I've been out on those boats with them. They're doing a fantastic job. But they're really only making a small dent in a really big problem. It's only a Band-Aid solution, really.